Good morning. We'll start the day with the Lord's Prayer and then the Pledge of Allegiance. Our Father, Lord in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, God will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory forever.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good morning. We have a busy agenda today, as everybody has seen the agenda, so to say the least, but we will proceed. Dave, have you got anything for agenda change?
We do have several suggested changes. First, under Michael Wizzo, County Engineer, land acquisition, we'd like to defer on that. And
are you going to defer on everything? Or on
Well, we'll leave the executive session on, but on the action item,
okay,
we'd like to defer on that.
Okay, I got you.
And also on their old business, change of zone 1631, we'd like to defer on that one also.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's it. Put it on after they're deferring.
What's that? Okay. Any other corrections, gentlemen? Being none, I'll tap the motion for the approved agenda.
Any motion we approve the modified agenda with deletion of Michael Izzo and also change of zone number 1631 for Sussex County Council, March 18, 2008, as in printed form.
Second. It's been moved and second that we approved the agenda as amended. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. You have the minutes in printed form for February the 12th. Any corrections or additions?
Make a motion we approve the minutes for Sussex County Council February 12, 2008, as in printed form.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we approve the minutes on February the 12th as printed. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes? Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
Where is Mr. Dukes?
Mr. Dukes is on kickback. Yes. Okay. Correspondence, Jim?
There is none.
That's a good thing. Dave?
First item on the agenda for myself is Caroling on the Circle Food Drive Recognition. And we are proud to have with us a number of the organizations, representatives from a number of the organizations that helped us with a very successful food drive. And I'm passing out some information that we collected over 20,000 food items in November and December. Which were raised and distributed to the Sussex County food pantries. And there are quite a few different organizations that participated, as you can see, including the County Council and county employees. I'd like to introduce Frank Shade. There he is. And thank Frank and Ray Webb and Susan Wise, who I don't think are here, for their work in putting this together and helping pick up the various food items and distribute them to the food pantries. We do have representatives here from a number of organizations, and we'd like to present them with a recognition plaque for their participation. And I will, probably the best way to do this is maybe, I thought we'd ask the schools to come up first. North Georgetown Elementary, Kathy Shelf, they'd like to come on up, and Mr. Jones, would you like to present the plaque? Or?
I think being Mr. Rogers is down that end, if he's the vice president, if he doesn't mind, he can turn. Frank, you'll help him out, make sure he doesn't mess up, huh?
Yeah.
I can see we're struggling here.
Can you take a picture, Chip?
Good morning, everybody.
Georgetown.
Yeah, could be school maybe.
Isn't that exciting?
That would be cool.
I don't follow her too much, but she could be.
They collected 1,783 food items.
Good looking. I'll take off.
Certainly, North Georgetown always is up in the top contenders, and, you know, we certainly do approve. Yep.
Top contenders.
You guys are certainly did well. Come on, smile. Come on, Mr. Rogers, you're doing a little better job of organization up there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Because he was on the end.
And next is Georgetown Elementary School.
Thank you, sir. Frank's got you covered.
And they collected 647 items.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
And then Howard T. Ennis School with 350 items. Selbyville Middle School.
Thank you.
255 items.
We'll have to tell our attorney he needs to give himself a talk about that Lance Land. It's public here.
What are you for?
And Southern Delaware School of the Arts with 105 items.
They left you.
It's like a drill sergeant.
I know.
Was Lynn involved in there? Is that the grade Lynn's in? Are you the teacher?
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
And then we have from, I think is that all the schools that, I think that's it for the schools. Okay. Next we have other organizations. First State Manufactured Housing Association with 2,300 items. Lori Rigby, I think, was, I'm not sure she's here. Oh, there she is. There.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's what
yeah. I was. Thanks, Lori. Okay.
Hey, better, Kevin? How's that, Kevin?
And then Mr. Gilbert Holt from Punkin' Chunkin' with 2,000 items.
Come on, Kevin.
Dave, can you talk more into your microphone? I'm
yeah.
hearing that
okay.
they can't hear you.
Okay.
You're not going next year, were you?
I didn't know that.
He was talking water, he's not talking pumpkins.
Got a haircut. Can you take a much better picture?
From Fuquay and Yuri, Lisa Massey and Jill Litton, 600 items.
All right. So about that? Businesses and individuals.
I'm glad you didn't send Tim up here anyway. They're a lot better looking than you, Tim.
I didn't want to ruin the picture.
And from Pat's Aircraft, Ms. Cheryl Parker, 475 items.
All right.
We may do better next year.
Keep those airplanes flying.
Representing the county employees with 1,800 items. Mr. Ira Hitchens.
It's going to be in the garden this year. You got to give me your card. You got to get a list of them.
And I'd like to thank everyone for all their efforts, because it certainly has a major impact in helping people in Sussex County.
Absolutely. We'll give him a second just to... Make sure everybody gets back to school, okay?
That's all I need.
Some other people have some real problems, and you've got to get back.
I need to find some of your
stuff. Cut down some of those damn trees.
Yeah.
No.
Good. I'm good.
Same
as Bill Henry. I think they came in together.
You need to be protected.
Somebody might see you.
My advice started talking.
Who are the roommates?
First and the Webb family.
Maritime College.
Teddy's. What are you afraid of?
We got on maybe a year before Bill Henry.
Okay, Dave.
Okay. The next item is a Planning and Zoning Commission reappointment. And I think Mr. Cole...
Rodney Smith, yes. Yeah. I'd like to reappoint Rodney Smith.
Okay. So that would be for a three-year term.
Three-year term, yes.
Second.
We move to second that we reappoint Rodney Smith to the P&Z Commission. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
And then the county administrator's report, the first item, Easter holiday, county government offices will be closed on Friday, March 21st in honor of Good Friday. The offices will reopen at 8:30 on Monday, the 24th. County council will not meet on March 25th in honor of the Easter holiday. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held today on April 1st at 10 a.m. Comprehensive plan update meeting. A workshop will be held this evening at 6 p.m. at the West Complex regarding the comprehensive plan update draft. Information will be presented regarding the proposed update to the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as the County Council. Public hearings will follow later on April 3rd and April 22nd. And the Engineering Department has granted beneficial acceptance to the following project: the Woodlands of Peppers Creek was granted beneficial acceptance on March 12th. The project is located on Main Street in the Dagsboro-Frankfurt Sewer District, consisting of 10 townhomes. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Baker? Being none, Susie?
Thank you. My first item today is a little bit of information on the county insurance. We rarely talk about county insurance because we basically do a three-year bid on our insurance, and this is the time for renewal, so I thought I'd just talk about it a little bit and let you know what's going on. Also today, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bill Townsend's here and Ms. Louise Thompson. Bill is in the finance department, and Louise is in the accounting department. Louise is one of our newest members, and she's a much-needed asset to the county. They both work on insurance and do a lot of work keeping us covered and keeping us safe. As I said, every 3 years it's time to put our insurance out to bid. We use insurance buyers consultant firm that comes down, and they do a risk management audit of the county's exposure. This includes visiting some of our major buildings like the EOC, which is very heavy technically oriented, and our Scruff buildings, and talking with personnel and discussing our goals and objectives. They then prepare an RFP. They supervise the bidding process, answer the questions with the potential bidders, and review the procedures and proposals. Then they make recommendations back to the county. This year, IBC will be doing this service for $17,950. For an example of why insurance is very important to us, in 2005, our assets totaled $110 million. In 2008, it was at $164 million. This is a 49% increase over the last 3 years when we last had the insurance bid, and this is due largely to the new EOC building, about $9 million, and the scruff upgrades, about $19 million. So insurance is a major impact at the county. Another big insurance cost to us is our workman's comp insurance. This is very expensive, around $500,000. We're proud now of our workman's comp insurance rating. We have an excellent modification rating and an overall accident rate because of the steps the county has done to protect this. We were previously considered at risk and hard to go and had to go under the state plan. Now we're out in the competitive market, and this year our existing carrier actually has already requested info to bid. One reason that's the case is because we hired a safety director, Mr. Joe Kemp, who does an excellent job in keeping our employees safe. He does training, drug testing, and he keeps safety out in front of our employees so they realize it's an issue that they need to be cognizant of in their everyday work activities. Having the safety director and a safety program has given us around a 4% discount or $20,000 off of workman's comp insurance. Also, our automobiles. We have many autos on the road. We educate our drivers. We put them through training classes. And adding and deleting drivers, we have 550 employees. Not all of them, obviously, have automobiles, but a lot of them drive. We have a large vehicle pool. Some have take-home. Some just use the vehicle for the day. But keeping up with our insurance, as you can see, adding drivers, deleting drivers, reporting accidents, claims is a very large job, and it takes up a lot of time. All this information must be relayed to our insurance carriers immediately. So that was, I just wanted to let you know, the information about insurance and see if there was any questions. The consultant did mention something he thought would be a good idea, and we're taking under consideration in the budget, and that's if possibly we should go through a countywide appraisal of our property at this point. We've never had one, and as you can see, the value of our assets is very large, so we're looking at that during the budget. And we will be back once this procedure's done and we have actual renewal and bids, and when we go, Scott will be here, Scott Agar, the consultant. And I'd like to thank Bill and Louise because they put in a tremendous amount of time now, and there's more work to be done still. And they'll be back too.
Thanks, Bill.
That's it.
I'd also like to thank Bill Townsend and Louise for all their work because it's quite a job to keep up with it on a daily basis, but when you have the 3-year renewal, there's a lot of extra work, and we appreciate all their help.
I can go right on. I'm next. Okay. Down to Georgetown.
Yep, you're next. There was a break.
Well, I didn't know if you had any questions.
You.
All right. The next is...
I don't have any questions. That's your job to take care of this guy.
Yeah. You're right.
That's
it
not
is.
Our
nothing
issue.
Nothing to question, is
there? Only when it hits the fan do we have questions.
Okay.
We're on fire.
We need to enter into a new agreement with the town of Georgetown for wastewater. The town of Georgetown provides wastewater to our industrial park tenants. And here today, Hal and Gary Tung and I... and Jim Hicken, but he's at a conference, have all worked together with the town of Georgetown to come up with a current agreement. Just to give you a little bit of history, our agreement with the town of Georgetown for wastewater for our industrial park users expired in 2004. It was an agreement from 1994, and it was a little complicated, and it was out of the norm from which the town of Georgetown typically bills their users. It was an annual lag in their billing. It was based on their audit, so the bill to us, which we passed on to the users, didn't really come out for a whole year behind. So all the readings that were taken were a year behind. The bill was a year behind. So now when it expired, Georgetown and the town and the county sat down, and we tried to negotiate on behalf of the users for a new, less complicated, straightforward agreement. As it was, the town of Georgetown billed us. We passed the bill on to the tenants. And since it wasn't based on Georgetown's existing sewer rates, it was based on actual rates on their audit. Here's a copy of what the current rate. What you can see here is what the current rate for Sussex County tenants were, and then what the town of Georgetown currently charges for in-town rates and out-of-town rates. The town of Georgetown was interested in getting this on back right on their schedule with their in-town rates and out-of-town rates. Now, in the industrial park, the county maintains the sewer lines. So we thought, you know, they should get a little break. So we negotiated that since we maintain the lines, we didn't want our users to pay the out-of-town rate, which is much higher. So in negotiations, we discussed the facts, discussed and see if they could pay the in-town rate, which is $4.51. This is higher from what our users are already paying. So we thought the first year, if you turn the page, we negotiated with the town of Georgetown to only pay 90% of the in-town rate and 90% of the availability fee. And then on the second year, Georgetown would bill direct to the users at their regular in-town rate, which is cheaper than their out-of-town rate. I know this sounds complicated.
No, it doesn't.
Well, in-town, meaning that 90%. The bottom line is the industrial park users are going to be on the same system with the town of Georgetown as every other user in town, you know, and the same billing, quarterly billing. Right now, it's annual billing. It's a year behind, and in negotiations, we felt we could get the in-town rate because the county does maintain the lines, and that would be less cost on the town of Georgetown.
And they agreed? They've agreed?
The industrial park user?
No, the Georgetown.
Oh, yeah. This is
this has all been agreed to. Okay.
No, yeah, well, it's on their council. They've approved it.
Right. Okay.
This is what I'm doing today.
Sounds fair.
And I don't know if Hal or Gary wanted to shed any light. It was a group effort. This is 6 to 8 months we've been working on this, trying to hammer out something that was less complicated.
And you guys want to come up?
We did have a meeting with the user, with the industrial park tenants.
Keep moving.
We did have a meeting with the industrial park tenants just to give them a heads up. Not very many of them out of 17, only three of the businessmen came, but it was the three that we thought had the biggest impact. And I will write a letter to make sure the others are familiar with what's going to happen with their billing.
Is all the sites metered, I assume, out there?
All the sites.
Come on up, Gary, for a second. Yeah.
All the sites are, in fact, metered. We're going to go in and replace some of the meters, because what you have out there is some of them have very large meters but very low flows. Right. So the way we were billing in the past, we were billing over a period of a year, so if a meter didn't increment for a month or so, it didn't matter.
Right.
Now, billing on a quarterly basis, they're going to have to increment.
Right.
So we are going to be replacing these meters. So I think they're called bypass meters that allow, you know,
right,
to read the low flow. And
that would give them more, especially the smaller ones, a more accurate reading because they have smaller flows.
I certainly think it'd be easier on the business to pay quarterly too, instead of having one hunk.
Yeah, I think they like that. I mean, they don't like, of course, raising fees, but it would be easier to manage a quarterly billing than a big annual billing. The annual bill is $44,000 that comes to us, and then it's broken out based on flows to the users.
Right.
It's hard for the user to run his business because, you know, if he's questioning something, he's questioning data that
is
better than a year old.
Right.
So it makes it hard. You know, if he goes out and reads his meter, it's not going to correspond to what we have now. We'll be billing, you know, real time live.
And the town will bill the tenants direct, correct?
Yes.
Instead of the county.
After the first year.
Right now, we divide up the bill. We pay the bill to Georgetown, then we divide it up and all that.
Right.
But.
So basically, we're out of the picture other than the negotiator.
And the second year, we're out of the picture.
Yeah, the second year, we're out of the picture, which is to everybody's benefit.
Right.
Do guarantee payment on the bills.
Yeah, as being the owner. I have a motion if there's not any more questions.
Thank you. You got a motion there, Susan?
Yes, be it moved that the Sussex.
Keep moving down there, Jordan.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the wastewater agreement between Sussex County and the town of Georgetown.
So moved.
Second.
It's moved to second that we approved agreement as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
Thank you. And thank you, Gary and Hal, for working with me.
That's cool. Bill? Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have Ms. Brandy Bennett, the housing coordinator, with me today. And we're going to be reviewing and providing our recommendation of the four proposals for the MPHU program, Modern Price Housing Program. I would like to give a brief overview and or history and overview, and Ms. Bennett will go over more detail each proposal that we received. We received four proposals going out for RFPs, request for proposals. 122 are starting the advertisement, and they returned on March 6th, receiving four for a total of 839 total units and 139 MPHUs giving to us if approved by council. All the applications we think meet all the ordinance guidelines. Ms. Bennett will get into some recommendations and concerns that we would like brought into the record. However, they all are in Central Sussex, mm-hmm. Allendale, Dykesburg, two in Georgetown. All of them are within a half mile of town centers, which the big push would state would like us to do that, even in the latest negotiations, Dave and them. And all are within a mile or half mile of Route 113 and Main Cardinal. With that being said, we do feel that they meet the ordinance guidelines, and I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Bennett to go through each application with you. I think she gave handouts, and then we'll take some questions on each. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
If it's okay, I'm just going to do a sort of a brief summary of what Mr. LaCates and I went over while reviewing, as well as the county staff committee and the working group. The basic parameters of the program are that all subdivisions that apply must have a minimum of 35 units. Right now, they have to be owner-occupied and located in growth areas as defined by the county's comp plan and a town's comp plan if it's in its future growth and annexation area. Each applicant also must have public water and sewer, and 15% of the total units must come to our program. And as you're aware, the developer receives a density bonus depending on the income targeted. They have full utilization of zoning designated and an expedited review. And I've also listed all the tiers for the income guidelines. To start off with, I guess I'm going to go over each proposal. And if possible, I don't know if we should do a motion after every proposal. What do you add?
Jim, you want to do it one package, or do you think we should just do each individual?
We have separate.
Yes.
Separate, okay.
Okay,
you have,
that's cool.
You do have separate concerns.
Yes,
about
I do have sort of.
If you're going to recommend conditions or stipulations that might differ from applicant to applicant, I think you should ask for a motion on each.
Then each, okay. Then to start, our first proposal is Powell Place, located in Georgetown. It has proposed Town of Georgetown water and sewer. It is in level one developing area. It's about 40 acres, and his total units are 88. They're all townhomes. The number of market rate units are 75, and they range between $170,000 to $240,000 for each unit. And he's sort of giving 15% to our program, and he's giving a mix of tiers, six in the highest tier, six in the tier B, and one in tier C. They're all very well integrated within the subdivision, and the developer is actually going to be the builder and the marketing entity for the project. And he will be delivering one moderately priced housing unit for every five market rate units. What we really liked about this project is that he's really trying to incorporate some green building. It's, of course, in level one. It's right in Georgetown, so it's great location to several employment opportunities. He is sort of it's going to be a commercial site as well, so he's really incorporating the live where you work theme. And depending on the market situation, he's going to entertain some financial incentives to our home buyers. He also has several public signatures of support of the development. Low homeowner association fees, and he uses the mixed tiers. The department, recommend this project for approval subject to the following conditions. We just wanted a more clear definition of the builder's relationship. We know he's doing it himself, but he also mentioned that he was going to have some assistance, so we sort of just wanted to know exactly who he would be utilizing. Also, documentation from the Town of Georgetown supporting their water and sewer capacity for the development. And then, as well, the number of bedrooms for all the MPHUs, whether they're two-bedroom homes, three-bedroom homes, that sort of thing. That's the first proposal. I don't know if any of you have any questions.
Is there a site plan showing the relationship between the C1? What's this up here on this that other box? It says 39 acres, currently zoned AR1, request for C1. I thought we closed C1.
Closed C1. Possibly. He submitted his application to planning and zoning.
Probably should say CR1.
CR1, okay. Probably.
Is that what that means? Okay.
I believe so, yes.
Uh-huh. And then do you have a site plan, Bill, showing where it said something about the work where the relationship of what kind of commercial it'll be? And
it just has just sort of an outline of where the offices are.
Yeah,
it's going to be all okay, because I had one time heard it was going to be something like a lot of storage.
There's mini storage units, yes, and then there's also
well, that's a stretch if you think people are going to work, live there and right. Work in storage.
Well, I think both. It's a combination, yes.
If it's well balanced or something, I can understand it. But
the storage units are just additional storage for the townhomes because that's smaller than a single family home, and then there's also lots of retail.
Okay.
You're evaluating in terms of the MPHU program.
Yes.
Not the ordinance. This is additional.
Still have to go through zoning.
Yeah, that's just
this
sort
is kind of
a bonus.
Additional things that we would like to see based on our previous review of applications to have up front more for our monitoring and they're going to need it when they go to zoning. I mean, all our recommendations are based on the ordinance and if they qualify there. Many of the other things are going to be based on you, council, and the zoning when they go there.
Right.
But some of them we just like to see up front to make sure.
Absolutely. You solve some of the problems for
the the other thing is this property is already owned by the applicant, so therefore he doesn't have to do any negotiation down the road with lease and contractual agreements.
Absolutely. Okay, gentlemen, we do have a motion for.
Let me just.
I haven't heard a motion. Do you all? Are you planning to read one?
Well, they made a recommendation. I think that was.
We ought to disclose that also the developer here is individual. The individual is just appointed to Planning and Zoning Commission, so that.
Right.
I mean, it'd be nice just to disclose that.
Right.
We're talking
for
about
the record, Mr. Smith is I understand just appointed to Planning and Zoning.
He's been
Commission.
On it, but he just got reappointed.
Yeah. And it's. Been sort of understood that he would just recuse himself from the hearing, obviously, that he's...
Absolutely.
Could I suggest a format of a motion that might kind of tie some of this together.
Go for it.
Move that we approve the MPHU application for the Powell Place development as described by the Community Development and Housing Office, subject to the conditions read into the record today.
Absolutely.
And subject to the applicant obtaining any necessary zoning approvals and construction permits.
Okay.
We'll just use that each time.
Yes, thank you.
We'll just keep duplicating it along with it. Okay. Motion, gentlemen, please.
So moved based on recommendation of the Housing Department.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Yeah. Come on, boys and girls. So moved to second that we approve the first project as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
Okay. Second proposal is Ingram Village, located in Ellendale. The developer here is Beaver Properties, LLC, care of Doug Simpson and Dale Wheatley. They have proposed sewer through Sussex County, which has been confirmed, and water through Artesian. They have site control as well. They're in a level two developing area, 102 acres, zone GR with a proposed RPC overlay. Total units of 401, 341 market rate units, and they are going to propose 60 Tier A moderately priced units to the program. These units are very well integrated into the project, single family and townhomes. The developer and builder relationship hasn't exactly been decided yet. They're determining sort of a Berica builder, and they haven't decided exactly when they will, how they're delivering moderately priced units to market rate units. And their first phase should be to the market by fall of 2009. What we like about this project is obviously it's level two, gives us several moderately priced housing units, and its location, Ellendale's, has great access to the resort areas. The one negative that we have is that it has some high homeowner fees of $200 a year, and they have submitted to annex into Ellendale. So on that note, we would just need to ensure that the moderately priced housing unit program restrictions withstand through the annexation.
And on something like when you bring 60 units into like Ellendale, right?
Yes.
And again, how do we deal with that? Do we control how many come on the market each year? Because it would be difficult in today's market for them to sell 60 units, whether they're, you know, almost giving them away.
Right.
So, I mean, do they... That's 60. Are we guaranteed that we're gonna always have 60 units there for that moderately priced housing, or do they get to get that back in their inventory after a certain number of years? Isn't there something?
20 years, and if it's turned over to 20-year start.
If they build all 60 in 1 year, Bill.
Uh huh.
All 60, and put them on the market.
Right.
And they didn't sell for a year. They didn't sell for
two years.
Yes,
they do have 180 days that it could turn to market. We get first
so,
to say.
But what I'm saying is, well, how can you do you control that they don't put too many to that they don't saturate the market because they know that they're not going to sell in 180 days, and they get them back, and then they can bump up the price.
Can't get them back.
Yeah, they can.
But after 180 days, they could put it. Yeah,
well,
but they the control there is they're one in build one in five, and they're going to sell blocks at 40 to builders.
They're also doing it in phases. That's my one concern is we don't know how many. They didn't specify how many MPHUs would be given each phase.
Yeah,
in proportion.
You're all aware nothing much sells in 180 days anymore.
Right.
Right.
So there is the potential for them to get, you know, have these, throw them out there, 180 days goes back, then they can take them off that list and they can price them higher.
But we have first option to
buy them.
To buy, not give them to a nonprofit, offer them to a nonprofit or a group.
We don't want to be doing that.
Well, if they're not going to sell at the low price, right. Why do you think they're going to all of a sudden?
The higher price.
Well, I don't know. They may not mind
Vance, sitting on a house and holding it in their inventory for the future, you know, and building them and just having the 180 days go by. They just might, because they some of these others might sell. I just question if that's a good plan. 180 days
actually,
is not.
Their market price is only about 25. One of our other concerns, about 25,000 more than our tier A, right?
So even their regular priced homes are, in right. your opinion, kind
yeah.
of moderate.
I mean,
price.
They right. could still be considerately, you know, within 250, 249 something, is that what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
249, 500 is what their price was for that. Our concern was just the opposite. What Mr. Cole's saying is that it may be too close to ours.
Right.
Well, we were actually
well,
looking for the 180, and they've offered that. Yeah.
No, I'm just thinking 180 days doesn't seem really very realistic.
I know.
We got stuck with 180 days, because I brought it up when we had talked about it once before, and we're still with this 180 days, and it's just not realistic. And we may see these homes that we think we're going to be moderately priced for the future, we may be losing
have
X
you
amount
had,
of them per year.
Have so, you had a lot of interest from the consuming public to buy these more affordable homes?
Well, we're actually going to wait for this RFP to complete before we really started marketing, because we didn't, since they're required to get their own financing, we didn't, since we're not sure of our timeline here, we didn't want to have them sitting and waiting on that.
When we first started this process, I thought I remembered Bill or someone saying that we've gotten a lot of calls from the public wanting to
We get calls all the time about, you know, how soon. In fact, the main call now is, why aren't any built, even from, you know, the media? And that's one of the reasons, and I should have brought up under the history, was, and I think I did in January when we talked about it, the group felt like if we went with smaller projects, less government agencies to have to comment on it and taking so long, that maybe within a year, and most of them have committed that fall of 2009, that they could start building, and that was our intent, and we felt we meant that. But we haven't got that far, other than people calling and just saying they like the program and it's certainly needed.
But there's 400 homes going into Ellendale under this project, and there hasn't been 400 homes built in Ellendale in 300 years. And it might take 10 years, and then all these 60 homes may not make it into the moderately priced, because, again, like you talked about, when the prices are so close, Bill, why would somebody restrict their appreciation and other restrictions that are placed under our program and not qualify for another $25,000? Because somebody that close is going to qualify. So it just doesn't seem like it's going to work. Now, it sounds good and feels good, but I just don't think it's going to work.
Well, in the past market, I totally agree, but in my opinion, now with the subprime going and the banks tighten it up, I really believe you could probably get somebody making $60,000 to get a $200,000 loan versus a $250,000.
Right.
I really believe that with the market changing, we're going to find that $20,000 and $40,000 is making a big difference in somebody being able to get approval from a lending institution to buy a home. And that's one reason I think the market
we'll
is
see.
Slowed.
We'll see. I think the 180
I
days is unrealistic, and I think the number of them. And
well, I agree, and I said that. I agree with you that we really need to take a look at that, and when we do the next ordinance amendment and change that. There is something that we have first say on it, and
it means nothing. I know we don't want to buy it, and we don't want to give them away.
Right.
We can't afford to be doing that. So that sounds good. Again, it feels good, but it's not practical.
So we get a project out on the street, we don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, if that part.
Look at statistics, Mr. Jones, and find out that 400 homes going into Ellendale. How long
they're
it would take
the
absorption
actually,
rate?
If you look at it, Mr. Cole, they also said they were phasing it,
yes.
And that's part of the issues that they're going to bring up. And if they're only that, certainly. I don't care if it's Mr. Wheatley or who it's going to be. It's not going to sit there and build 100 homes when they think they can only sell 40.
Right.
They're going to might put the infrastructure in and phase it as that, and that's part of the deal, not to saturate the system.
I will say this, that they've been working with Allendale for 2 years
right.
on this project. We heard about it 3 months ago,
right.
or January. Obviously, they were going to go ahead with a project with 400 units, whether
right.
we got 60 or none. At least maybe we're going to get 60, and maybe we only get 30 versus your negative. But that's 30 more than we have at the end of the day.
I guess.
Well, I think one of the things, like in Ellendale, and I've been part of that deal since it started, that they want to get affordable housing in Ellendale. I think that the discussion was going on here about phasing in through the P&Z process, it should be phased in. You don't want to just saturate it.
Yeah.
And the whole idea was that the people that live there now can improve themselves by getting a moderately priced home, except instead of bringing 400 people in,
right,
new residents, they want to try to get the people that are there to be able to improve themselves. And I don't think anybody wants to see, you know, the money being so close that they could jump to the next level for the price of a car.
Right.
And a lot of people take that gamble. So, but I think that it's got to be phased, because if you just saturate it, it won't be a local market. It'll be somebody out of town buying it.
Right. Well, we also spoke to Mr. Ashman from the county engineers, and the reason that they allowed them to utilize the county sewers because they were under the understanding that it would be a phased project, that there wouldn't be a large number of units going in per year. So
engineering can control it to even more so than you guys.
Right.
And so can zoning. When they go to zoning,
they got to control the number of units that get in there, not engineering. That's not their job.
And the phase,
well, no,
on the phase,
I'm
not talking on the phase
EDUs.
Part.
EDUs.
The EDUs not available. When we finished the sewer district in Ellendale, I believe we had 115 EDUs left.
Okay.
And they were pretty much spoken for in Newmarket Village area. Now they're looking to expand regionally. So that's going to be an issue if there's not central sewer put in.
Okay.
So, again, our issues that we recommend, but subject to these conditions, are that we want to know how many MPHUs are being built per phase and the proportion to the market rate units, a more defined who the builder is going to be, as well as the number of bedrooms for the MPHUs and the housing type, how many townhomes and how many single families. So that's our to motion.
Do you want to put in there also it's been about the Ellendale annexation, or is that not an issue? I mean,
it is. I think it's more lies in our legal documentation at this point.
Okay.
Hopefully, unless you are concerned.
Jim, you want to? Did you write down some notes and everything?
Are you ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Being moved, this the county council approved the MPHU application of the Ingram Village Development, as recommended by Community Development, subject to the conditions read into the record and subject to the applicant obtaining any necessary zoning approval and construction permits.
Second.
Moved and seconded, we approved the project as with the conditions. Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I'll vote yes. I'm really skeptical. I was skeptical from the beginning, still am, but since we've now adopted the ordinance and it's moving on, I'll support these. But it's just, I think that government can't do everything to everybody, and I'm afraid this is one of these sound good, feel good type programs. And
okay.
Anyway, I'll vote yes because we have the ordinance to do this. They are complying.
Phillips, yes.
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I'm all for this MPHU development, and I've been with you since the start. And I got the confidence that you'll tweak this thing to tighten it up with the concerns that we got. And because the developers, you give them a set of guidelines, they'll go by it. If you make it easy, they'll go by it too.
Right.
So I think that we need to keep a handle on the inception of the program to make sure it gets off the ground right. So with that, I say yes.
My vote is yes also with the recommendation.
Okay, third proposal. You have seen this project before. This is Seacoast Speedway. Developer Seacoast Investments. It's in Georgetown, obviously, where the Speedway is. They're still trying to confirm their water and sewer. He does have site control. We've been told that they're in the future annexation of area of Georgetown for their draft comp plan, as well as the counties. But I'll come back to that. It's 82 acres. There's total 195 units, 156 market rate units, ranging from 275 to 350. And he is giving us 20% of those units, which is 39 in the Tier A income range. He is the integration of the moderately priced units is of 6 to 8 units throughout development. He has not established a builder, and his construction delivery will be one moderately priced unit to every one market rate unit. We obviously love the location. It's accessible to many employment opportunities, and there's low homeowner fees here. Our issue is the integration of units. They're supposed to be extremely integrated, not differential from any other of the market rate units, yet he's sort of clustering them, which is a concern. And they also weren't noted on the lots of the site plan, which we asked for. A letter has been submitted by the town manager of Georgetown confirming that the property is in their comp plan, so that's why we're bringing them to you today. And again, we recommend this project for approval pending the passing of the Georgetown Comprehensive Plan and the following conditions. We also need letters from his utility sources once those are established, who his builder will be, designated MPHU lots on the site plan, number of bedrooms again, and the housing types for the moderately priced units. So with that, if we could have a motion, yes. I don't know if the council has, we are doing it pending the Georgetown Comprehensive Plan.
That's fine. Part
okay.
of the motion.
Okay.
I move that we approve this application based on the approval of Georgetown / Sussex County Comp Plan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That provides the appropriate zoning and growth designation for this site.
Question.
Question.
Okay. So before it moves, it's contingent on all these approvals.
Yes.
Before you even move forward.
Right.
Because
yes.
That was a big question.
Oh yeah, it's not. We're not. If the comprehensive plan isn't passed, then it's not moving forward with our program.
Okay. So presently, it's not in the district, but it tends to be in the district.
Right. It is.
It's
now.
Agreed.
It's in their future okay. annexation.
Yeah.
Right.
That we've confirmed, and it is in our.
In their draft anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
With the contingencies, I second it.
Okay. Been moved to second that we approve the project with the amended conditions. Mr.
Okay.
Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Okay.
Screeched in by majority.
And finally, moorings of Peppers Creek. This developer's HKS Properties LLC, Ocean Atlantic. It is located in Dagsboro, actually about 100 feet from town limits. Public sewer, Sussex County, water will be tidewater. They have site control. It is level 4, but environmentally sensitive developing area, which is allowed by our program. It's 80 acres. Total units are 150. Number of market rate units are 123. They range from 150,000 to 250,000. And they've given us 18% above the minimum moderately priced housing units, also spreading the different tiers, Tier A, 5, Tier B, 13, and Tier C, 5. They're very well integrated into the development. They sort of spread among a variety of housing types, twin homes, townhomes, single family, and flat stacked. They have 3 separate phases, and they give us a very detailed explanation of how many moderately priced units for each phase to market rate units, and they begin plan to start in the summer or fall of 2009. This was actually the most detailed organized proposal that we received. They're giving us 18% units, low homeowner fees, great amenities. This is actually the one developer that's offering a financial incentive to the home buyer, which is 3% seller's credit at closing. Location, obviously, very close to town, and a mixed use of tiers. The only thing that we'd like this project to be contingent on is the letters from the utility sources just confirming that they're going to be supplying them. But as of that, that's really our only issue with this project.
You know, you said something interesting. You said this is the one that's impressed you the most and has done, I guess, providing most of the information, or, I mean, all the stuff. Anyway. And the others were just basically on the surface, you're not getting much. You're just getting an indication they'd like to do it anyway. But what my question would be is, if you follow what I'm trying to get, a time component. Once we adopt these, do they expire, or is this just sits out there till they get around to wanting to do them?
And a good question, and I was going to follow up at the end. What is zoning, 3 years or something?
I don't know. I'm just wondering, how's this, but with this ordinance, though? I mean, once we adopt this.
Actually, what we're going to do, with the previous round, this wasn't actually implied immediately. We have moderately priced housing unit agreement, which is the official contract, which is the next step once they're approved from this round. And I actually included this, that we expect them to sign this within 30 days after they've been approved through the commission and final council approval. So as soon as that's going to be submitted to them, much quicker than the last round. Which,
well, the one, say, for instance, at Lincoln.
Thanks.
For Allendale, I mean. If they don't do anything from here on out, does that ordinance just kind of sit there?
Well, we just asked one of the past approved applicants, withdrew them from the program per committee in our recommendation, and asked them to reapply because they're taking so long. They had contracts.
Once we adopt what we've just done,
we have an option to deny or turn down if they don't agree with the agreement.
If they don't follow through with their construction timeline as submitted in the contract, then we can terminate the process at any time.
You have to come back in and we unvote it after we voted. What did we just vote on? Ordinances? Okay. Are these ordinances, Jim, that we're doing?
No.
You're allowed to get an MPH.
So basically, we can right. Let them go from the program at any time if they fail to.
So it's easy to undo what we've just done.
If necessary.
If they don't meet certain requirements. Right. Because you're talking about a couple hundred, 250 units we've just talked about here today in this little package.
Yes.
And again, the market, you know, you can go to analysis that they all have out there that how long it would take to absorb 250 units. And you can look at different prices and ranges and stuff, and you could figure out how much can the county handle, you know, 250 units if these all came on at the same time. A lot of analysis that probably can be done to help with as we accept these, and so we don't get too many.
I don't think we'll get too many. I think
it's got nothing to do with you think. I mean, I think there's
well,
like I said, there's just
you're thinking too.
I'm thinking that I'm thinking we're not looking at any statistics and having anything that shows that there is a, you know, the market can absorb certain things, and that's all. That's what I'm missing out of this whole presentation is absorption rates, which are easily to calculate. They do it all the time, and are we just approving a bunch of stuff? Because it's again, it. Everybody wants to do something for affordable housing, and
I'd just like to see
some more maybe,
Mr. Phillips,
analysis.
It's
like
my that. Understanding that these have been brought forth so that we can accelerate the delivery of product to the marketplace to see how the program works. You have no intentions of opening up another RFP before we actually start to see how this thing works, or at least I hope you don't. Because there is the need to work out the fine points of this, and I think these four applications are of a size that we can get them on the market and see how things are, and we have to tweak them in the future as well.
That was sort of our plan. The first round was larger developments that were submitted, and obviously with the current market, it's not really feasible for them to continue. So that's why we focused on smaller developments, and I feel that all four of these are very reasonable. And all four have said they're going to move forward with this as soon as possible, and they can. So that's why we're...
We do have interest from at least one other developer who is waiting for some other...
issues?
Yeah, he has some other issues before it, but he's interested in applying.
I agree.
To the program.
Mm-hmm. I think by some of those time that some of those issues are solved, that you know, certainly some of these projects could be up and running and you know, or not up and running, but at least pushing dirt and some of those type things. And
right.
Like I said, they are smaller projects. I think this is what we're going to have to do for the present time to be able to get this project off the off center. Okay.
That motion needs to have a little caveat to it.
Just that we would like a letter from the utility sources.
I move we approve it contingent upon House Department getting a letter from the utility.
Okay. Second, gentlemen.
Cold turn.
Huh?
Cold turn.
I don't like the whole program. You go ahead.
Second.
There we go. It's been moved to second that we approve this project as stated with the conditions. Mr. Cole.
I'll vote yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion approved.
Thank you.
Any other?
So that would be.
You've had enough fun, huh?
That would be a total, if I calculate it right, 139?
Yes.
139 MPHUs.
Well, hopefully, as I said, with the smaller projects, it will get all centered and we'll be in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just for, I've asked Mr. Izzo for the executive session to postpone that, being we were supposed to start at 10:30 for the public hearing on the water source. So we'll move right into the 10:30 hearing. Jim, would you like to go from there? Shane, you can come on down if you want. Are you the water source or Hal? Hal's the lucky one, huh? Okay.
This is the advertised time and place for a public hearing on an ordinance to adopt Chapter 89, the Source Water Protection Ordinance to protect critical areas from activities and substances that may harm water quality or subtract from overall water quality. And is there any comment from any member of council before we open this up to public comment?
Let's keep going.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any member of the public present who would like to be heard regarding this matter?
Oh, Dan Kramer.
Now, I know somebody, all these people are here, and that's not to see our pretty faces today, that's for sure. You know, that's.
Again, is there comments? Anyone here from the public who would like to be heard concerning? We need you to
come on
forward.
Down.
Break the ice.
State your name and address before you make your statement.
We did receive your letter. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Gary Stavely. I live at 13 Harborview Road in Lewis, Delaware. I'd like to thank the council members for hearing me before. And I would like to say I appreciate your consideration and hearing our request for the delay in responding to that. I would like to reiterate the fact that Mr. Holt had mentioned and testified that he would, Lewis would like to have the 150-foot radius. However, that doesn't seem to be in the ordinance, so therefore it's you have to move on, you have to do what you have to do. However, we are concerned about water quality. We are close to the sea, and we can have contamination, saltwater contamination in our wells. And so whatever we do, it's incumbent on us to really protect the source water that we get from wherever we get it from. And I appreciate the opportunity to approach you again. Thank you very much.
We did receive letters in through the first ordinance on your concerns. I understand.
Thank you.
For anyone else who would like to be heard concerning this proposed ordinance,
just what is David or somebody the radiuses that we're in this one now? They were simply.
There's a 100-foot safe zone.
The 100-foot instead of the 150.
Where the larger wells and 20-foot for the smaller wells.
Right. Instead of 20-foot, instead of what was recommended by DNRAC?
150 is recommended for both.
For both.
The committee recommended this.
Good morning, Kevin. 20 and 100, okay.
All right.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Kevin Burdett at 26177 Deep Branch Road, Milton, Delaware. I would like to ask for your consideration and provide some comments on the Wellhead Protection Ordinance. If you have a copy of the ordinance there, under Section 89-4, Definitions, which is of the safe zone, I would ask to add the verbiage excluding structures for the well, comma, water distribution and or treatment. They somehow got left out.
Excuse me, Kevin, would you say what
again?
Number?
89-4, Definitions.
Right.
We are asking that you add the word excluding structures for the well, comma, water distribution, comma, or treatment.
Your comments written?
Yes, sir. I have a copy. I'll submit to you, Jim.
Okay.
This area, in the definition, continue to read, this area shall be maintained in a grass or natural vegetative state. Vehicular traffic should be limited in this area to include only emergency or maintenance vehicles. And I'm going to ask that you add, comma, however, multiple multimodal paths, biking paths, walking trails, and golf cart paths may be allowed in designated portions of the safe zone. The reason I would ask that you add that is in taking this ordinance as it presently exists today and actually trying to apply it to some projects that are under development, mm-hmm. we found that we had rather massive open areas that we were holding around the wells, in some cases greater than the 100-foot safety zone. However, in order to make them effective areas, we needed to kind of connect some existing parcels around the outer perimeter. So we needed to run, or wish to run, walking paths and biking paths out in the outer portions. And I will further elaborate that under paragraph 89.6, section 89-6, paragraph C2 and D1. The verbiage, as I served on the committee for this ordinance, was to be the same between those two paragraphs. Between the multiple drafts that have gone back and forth and up and down, mm-hmm. the verbiage and wording has changed between those two paragraphs. And it was never the intent of my understanding of being on the committee that those two paragraphs should change, as they do describe the exact same thing. Again, in that area, I'm asking for that paragraph to read, a safe zone of no less than 100 feet radius from the well shall be maintained. Period. This safe zone may include buildings and access associated with the well, comma, water distribution and treatment facilities and their related maintenance, period. No unrelated facilities, comma, or slash structures shall be located within the safe zone without the county council approval. And I'm asking to add, comma, however, multimodal paths, biking paths, walking trails, or golf cart paths shall be allowed in the outer 50% of the safe zone.
So that's not a committee recommendation. That's your recommendation.
That is my recommendation.
Your
recommendation.
Yes, okay. I want to get that. Yes,
all of these are Mr. Burdett's recommendation.
All of these are mine, not the committee, sir.
Gotcha. Okay. No, he referenced the committee a couple times, and now so it's easy to get confused.
Okay. Under section 89-6, paragraphs F1 and F2, behind the words tax parcel, we would ask that you add the following. Comma or combination of multiple tax parcels for a project. It is my understanding, and the way it is presently worded, if you have three or four tax parcels within a project, the way the ordinance is presently written, it looks at each one individually, although they may be a combined project covering multiple tax parcels. So in my opinion, that's more of a housekeeping issue than anything else. Under section 89-6, paragraph F3, again, that's where we have placed the addition to the tax parcel to include or combination of multiple tax parcels for a project, and it goes on for the rest of the paragraph as written. Under section 89-7, paragraph A1 and A2, again, behind the words tax parcel, add the following, which is, or combination of multiple tax parcels for a project. Under section 89-7, paragraph A3, again, that's where we are asking for the or combination of multiple tax parcels for a project and to be added following the words that you have in there presently of tax parcel. In attempting to take this ordinance and apply it to some projects which our firm presently has under design, I came up with multiple questions, and it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. This is a very complicated ordinance. It is different than any ordinance which I've been experienced in the state of Delaware, in that much different than the wetland ordinances. Those are fixed maps which we are using, and consultants can say, okay, there's the wetlands, and they design things to that. If this ordinance just addressed the excellent recharge areas, we could live the same way that we live with wetland lines. Those excellent recharge areas aren't going to change. However, this ordinance also addresses wellhead protection areas for wells that are coming online all the time. So if you want to think of it, the field of design is changing from day in to day out. Standing here today, we all may not have knowledge of a potable production well going into service. Tomorrow, it may show up on a map with a delineated wellhead protection area, so 5-year time of travel, 60-day time of travel, whatever. So there's constantly going to be changing going on the maps. With that in mind, I would ask that you consider the following. Under section 89-8, add a paragraph E. In paragraph E, the general intent of what we are trying to provide is this. Mr. Griffin and his wordsmithing, I'm sure, can give you all the legalese to make it correct, but paragraph E to read something like this. Within 45 days of the adoption of this ordinance, the Sussex County Engineering Department shall present to the County Council recommended policy and procedures for submission of the required documents for processing a proposed development project as it applies to this ordinance for the Council's approval. Within 18 months of the adoption of this ordinance, the County Council will modify this ordinance to include submission procedures as a portion of this ordinance. Recognizing that there may be needs to address unanticipated situations at the time of adoption, the Sussex County Engineering Department will continue to refine the anticipated submission procedures during the 18-month period to allow for an orderly progression in the submission process. Basically, what I am asking the council to consider is a way that you can have your policies
in place,
developed in-house, and those policies are going to constantly be changing. And I don't think the residents of Sussex County nor the county council wants to try to be readopting or modifying an ordinance every time you find a blip on the radar screen. For example, there are no set procedures anywhere within this ordinance of who has to be contacted to verify if a wellhead protection area lies within the submission of a proposed subdivision. Nor does it designate when someone has to check if that wellhead protection area is there. The things I see coming into problem, you come to a final plan submission, after you've already received preliminary, of a subdivision that has been within the county system, working within the state system for some period of time, probably 2 years. And at final plan approval, somebody stands up and says, wait a minute, a well was brought online yesterday. This plan no longer is in compliance because it doesn't show this, 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 and this. I don't think that's the intent nor the desires of this council. Equally, I'm not so sure who to contact on subdivisions that are here today, been approved preliminarily, and when in the preliminary plan approval, it does not stipulate where wells are going to be located within the project because it hasn't been a requirement in the past. So I have preliminary plan approval already existing on projects where we plan on putting wells in that may or may not be affected by this ordinance. Consequently, this ordinance is a land use ordinance and doesn't go back to affect the well. So once the subdivision's approved, this ordinance does nothing to stop the well from being put in place. And I, again, don't think that's the working relationship that you were trying to acquire. There are so many questions, I think it's going to come almost from a trial and error. As Mr. Cole and Mr. Phillips said earlier, we're going to have to go through the PUMH, or the housing project, and work out some of the bugs as we go along. I think that's exactly what we're going to have to do with this ordinance. And why I am asking for paragraph E to be added is to give you the flexibility to allow engineering to do policies and procedures for up to an 18-month period. Hopefully, within 18 months, we'll all know as many glitches as we're going to have, and those policies and procedures have eliminated those. At the end of the 18 months, this ordinance or those policies and procedures would be taken and adopted in under paragraph E as the acting policies and procedures which someone uses.
So every 18 months they could be changed?
No, sir.
Just the first 18 months. Okay.
You could do your policies and procedures in-house, which do not require public hearings and everything else. It's just a you all acceptance to your engineering department as to what you want them to do. But what I'm saying is, in 18 months from the date of this ordinance, that those policies and procedures be laid down and be placed in this ordinance so that they are a public record, and any changes after that would have to be a modification to this ordinance. And I think 18 months should be a sufficient time.
I see what you're saying.
Perhaps engineering would say.
I was thinking you were saying that the ordinance ought to be flexible, that as things change and as we're walking, you know, through this, that every, you know, that if we make changes, the changes would last 18 months, and then if we made any other changes, we would have to.
That was not my intent. Perhaps not a bad idea.
Yeah,
I'd like to see
in some stuff like this, flexibility wouldn't hurt, and I don't know how you would word that. We would have to rely on our staff.
What I'm saying is, given us the first 18-month flexibility, and I would hope in 18 months we kind of nail it down.
You never nail some of this stuff down.
That's probably true, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm just going to ask you now. Are you done?
I've got one more, and that's under Section 89-13, the effective date. So that we do have the flexibility and allow engineering the time to come up with the first blush of rules to follow, I would ask that this be added. This ordinance shall become effective 60 days following the adoption of the ordinance. That gives engineering 60 days to be able to get the rules put together and out on the street so that everybody knows what we're playing by. Those are the comments that I have. I will submit those to Mr. Griffin. Yes, sir, Mr.
Griffin. I got like 89-9, it says non-conforming uses, okay?
Yes, sir.
Does that solve some of your issues that we were talking about as far as unknown and known? I guess, you know, it says non-conforming use of A and B. I mean, I have marks on both of those. I still have some concerns about those two issues, about existing lots with the impact, as just what you said, as far as if somebody punks a well down, what happens, you know? And I know, you know, is that...
President Jones, I don't necessarily think that addresses the items that I'm concerned with, because as I interpret that section, that is for items that exist the day the ordinance is passed.
Right. You're more concerned about new construction.
And I'm concerned about things that are going to happen in the future.
Okay.
And we're going to have to live with this ordinance for quite a while.
Right. Okay.
Regarding your question about individual lots,
right,
look at 89-12, there's an exception in there.
I see the anything to record, but what is it?
Exception number one.
Right. We can talk about this later. Okay. Anything else, Kevin?
No,
any
sir.
Question, John? We do have your comments too.
I've got a copy of them.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else present who would like to be heard concerning this proposed ordinance?
I'm Rich Collins, Executive Director of the Positive Growth Alliance. Our offices are now in Georgetown, close by, so we'll be able to visit Mr. Cole quite often.
Great.
I think the testimony we just heard was enlightening. We've been concerned about this ordinance in general from the very start when we first spouted about a couple years ago, because of what we felt was just the potential for continuing down the path of more and more red tape. We've had a speculative excess in home building in this county and in the nation, no question about it. But I have come to understand recently that a good number of these foreclosures you've heard about are on spec homes that have never been lived in. Speculators drove the market to the excesses. And during that time, all levels of government have enacted policy after policy to deal with this land rush. And what I'm fearing now is that these policies are still going to be in place. My view is that once we get past this very troubling time we're in right now, in terms of real estate, we're going to go back to where home building is more about providing a home for people who need a place to live. And all of these spider webs that we have built over the last several years are going to be in place, entangling innocent citizens simply trying to live and have a good place to live, driving up the cost, etc. As far as specific concerns, you have, in definitions, there is a definition of confined aquifer. However, there is not specifically one for an unconfined aquifer. I will say that later on in the body of the text, it pretty much tells you what that is. But it does appear to me that many of the definitions in here could change based on what Denrek's interpretation might be at any given moment. Number two, I'm also confused about items on pages 6 and 7. On page 6, subparagraph 4, it says, notwithstanding with provisions of 89-6A in industrial, business, or commercial districts, then skip to the last two lines. The gross impervious cover shall be equal to or less than the original impervious cover percentage of the original site. Now, the way I read that is you can go out and start a brand new commercial site, have any amount of impervious cover you want as long as you meet the requirements of the ordinance. But it looks to me like if you're trying to do a redevelopment of a brownfield, you're, for some reason, stuck with the mistakes of the past. That's what it looks like to me. I would ask you to check that out. You have the exact same situation on page 7 in paragraph B. And I think also Kevin just pointed out, even though that item 89-9 says no land shall be changed, which shall extend a non-conforming structure. Again, it seems to me you can build anything you want brand new, but you can't maybe clean up an old site. That seems to me to be an unintended consequence. Okay. Page 8. There is an interesting part.
Are you talking about 89-8?
89-8A. All subdivision and land development plans depicting development or land disturbance submitted for county review shall be evaluated for the existence of wellhead protection areas, etc., etc. Now, land development is defined in your definitions on page 2 as a proposed development of land which may involve one or more tract parcels for any residential, commercial, or industrial use or combination thereof proposed within these areas. Now, you do have an exemption there, as Mr. Griffith pointed out, for single-family homes, I believe, minor subdivisions. Nevertheless, this looks perilously close to requiring that anything that anyone does might involve a county review or close to it. Okay. I think what Mr. Kevin brought up about the time factors, I'm involved with a gentleman right now. He's come to me and asked for a little advice on a totally different issue. You have 3 years to get your final approval from the time you get a preliminary approval. He has been requested to totally change his plans by the county at the last minute, literally within the last month or two of his last date. And because of a variety of red tape items, he has been delayed for this entire 3-year period to where he is absolutely up against it and able to get his final. So my question is simply this. If that well is put in 2 weeks before your hearing or whatever, are you completely blown out of the water? Are you in violation? Now, in a general sense, and I'll be honest with you, this was not on my radar screen. This was very eye-opening a minute ago. One of the true strengths of Sussex County government has been, and I think one of the reasons that you are basically one of the last fiscally sound governments in this state in a very difficult economic times, is that you have never built up this massive bureaucracy that is required when you have laws that requires micromanagement of all affairs. And it looks to me like, based on what testimony we just heard a minute ago, you are going to require a staff that you don't have at the present time to develop a very complex set of rules and to deal with who knows how many situations of this, just based on this idea that new wells will constantly be coming onto the map. I will say, to try and make this clear for folks, DENREC still has the responsibility for providing safe water. Now, that is not what you are doing here. In other words, as an example, look at a typical residential home with a septic tank. DENREC has a rule that says the septic tank has to be 100 feet from the well. That is, or actually not the tank, the drain field. Right. That is a safety rule.
Right.
What you do is land use. Now, if you came along and you said, all right, we can't have a house between the well and the septic field, that would be a land use decision. And that is what the aura that you're dealing in here with this rule. So I don't know. I'm not saying don't have an ordinance. I'm simply suggesting you need to look at the ramifications, which quite honestly are quite eye-opening. It's going to be an interesting thing to see how you figure it out.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Glad to see you're in Georgetown. I'll be looking forward to these moments every Tuesday.
Anybody else like to be heard? This gentleman, I believe, wanted to speak next.
R.C. Willen, 3271 Stein Highway, Seaford, Delaware. I did serve on the Source Water Protection Committee, but I'm speaking as a citizen today. I will, however, refer to some of the things that took place during the process that we were involved with in attempting to provide a document that you could work with. Draw your attention to 89.8C2, which delineates the 89.6C1. And here you see delineation of the time of travel that DENREC basically imposed upon us, which is a 5-year time of travel. In initial discussion by the committee, it was determined that this would be a very difficult issue to resolve. It was proposed during that time that if anyone, being a purveyor of the water, many of which do so for a profit, were to locate a well in an area that required this delineation of a 5-year time of travel, with the subsequent restrictions that are imposed upon that area contained in this document, that would in effect place extreme burden perhaps on individual landowners whose tax parcels are adjacent to this well. It was presented at that time the possibility of requiring the purveyor of the water who installs the well to either purchase a conservation easement for the area of delineation, the 5-year time of travel delineation, or purchase that area fee simple. A number of the purveyors of water within our state argued against that, and that item was dropped just because of the fact that when you place a large production well in, the 5-year time of travel can cover 200 or 300 acres, affecting large areas of land. Mr. Burdett accurately described the scenario I think that you're going to be faced with in implementing this ordinance, in that every time a well goes in, the map changes. And that can be happening on an ongoing basis. It will be very difficult for staff to maintain the proper documentation so that the public, for whatever reason, has issues with regard to this document that you're about to approve or disapprove, constantly in limbo, make it very difficult for them to understand how they can comply with this document. No other county in the state is required to have the 5-year time of delineation, as I understand it. We've reviewed the plans from Kent County and Kent County, Newcastle County, and none of them require the five-year time of travel delineation as a wellhead protection area. At the next to the last meeting that the committee had, it was my understanding from the Deseret representative at that meeting, Mr. John Barn, that we had a workable document. It did not include anything regarding the five-year time of travel. Apparently, after review by DENREC at a later date, and I suspect by after review by the State Planning Office and individuals within the governor's office, it became apparent that our document was no longer satisfactory, which required the council to send that document back to us. We have complied with DENREC's request and included wording that identifies the five-year time of travel. I understand and support the intent of that five-year time of travel with regard to water quality and water quantity that's available. I also respect the first comment that we heard here regarding the possibility of saltwater intrusion if we do not provide for adequate weed charge in the wellhead areas. I am not sure that you are, as the council, aware of all the implications, maybe you are, of adopting this policy here without perhaps adopting another ordinance that does in fact place the responsibility for the protection and recharge characteristics of that five-year time of travel on the purveyor of the water. If a purveyor desires to profit from withdrawal of water and serving the citizens of this county, I think it's incumbent upon them to at least exercise some due responsibility to maintain that wellhead area and the protection of it without imposing that restriction on adjacent landowners who may not even be aware that they're subject to specifications that are outlined here within this ordinance. How can it be made manageable? My concern is that you have a document that the state will, in fact, approve. That being said, there have been a number of recommendations that I'm sure you're aware of that have requested that the five-year time of travel be limited to something less than this. I would encourage you to at least consider those suggestions. But in lieu of that, if you feel that the five-year time of travel is necessary to provide for proper water quality and quantity within these wellhead areas, that you impose another ordinance that will in fact obligate the purveyor, whether it be a public purveyor or a private purveyor, to assume the responsibility, either through a conservation easement or fee simple purchase, of the wellhead area. This has been done in Kent County with regard to the city of Dover purchasing the Tarburton property. If we are truly serious about the implications of this ordinance, then it is incumbent upon you, I think, to recognize the impact that it'll have on all the citizens of Sussex County, not only for water quality, but also the cost of providing it. That cost should be borne by those who use the water. And I do not have a copy of these comments.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Any questions?
They're written down there that you can get them to us later.
I'll give them to you.
The bottom line is, yeah, RC, that a well put in by Tidewater or whoever on a 20-acre block of land somewhere in the county could actually have a huge impact on the surrounding property. Based on the five-year time of travel. And currently, this ordinance provides no compensation mechanism or otherwise to those property owners.
Mr. Phillips, you're right. One of the concerns that we identified as a part of this committee was the fact that a well is often placed not in the center of a new development or project. And Tidewater indicated a desire to be able to upgrade existing facilities. This is consistent with the Public Service Commission's directives to those private purveyors that in all cases where it's possible, that interconnection be utilized and further development of existing locations be utilized. That being the case, you could have a 500-gallon-a-minute well in a subdivision that's providing water for that subdivision, that Tidewater would submit application to expand it to 1,000 gallons a minute, put in a different well or enhance that well, further increasing the area of delineation with regard to the five-year time of travel that could very easily impact several hundred acres.
Was any of this in the original ordinance?
No.
Was there discussion of this at the committee?
It was in the original discussion, but the committee could not come to a consensus on that. And I understand why they couldn't. It's a very difficult, because the implication is that the purveyors would be required to then either purchase fee simple, the land, within the five-year time of travel, or they would be required to purchase a conservation easement from those associated tax parcels.
Right. Now, in the makeup of that 10-member committee, most of them appreciate property rights to the extent that if you do something on your land that is going to affect another property directly, there should be a compensation mechanism. Where was the disconnect? Without getting personal.
Mr. Phillips, I'm afraid I cannot answer that question. Okay. But I can only tell you that there was not a consensus to move forward in that direction. And, you know, I want you to understand that I do have a respect for this ordinance. I think it's a very good ordinance that took an awful lot of time to create, much more time than you anticipated by the funding that you put forth for this project. That being said, this one paragraph right here is going to cause tremendous difficulty in administration. I'm not saying it's not necessary or appropriate, but the administration of this will go far beyond anything that you can comprehend at this point.
Hopefully I haven't missed it, but can you speak to the five-year time of travel versus a 60-day time of travel?
The 60-day time of travel that's included in this ordinance refers only to those confined aquifers.
Right.
The five-year time of travel refers to all unconfined aquifers in the county, which we are predominantly unconfined aquifers here. And the map that you would have for the excellent recharge areas represents, I believe, about 8% of the county. The mapping that's going to be required for this particular aspect of the ordinance, I have no idea how much of the county will be impacted because I have no idea the number of wells are going to go in place over a period of time. But I can assure you that it will significantly impact more than another 8% of the county. It's feasible that it will impact the entire county as additional wells are put in place.
Well, maybe the 18 months it was referenced earlier, you know, giving us some flexibility to make some modifications in the policy is a good point, and maybe we need to work something in there because of these issues. We'll never know. Right. We could talk about it till doomsday, and I don't think we'll ever know because we're all speculating. So I don't know if we're going to come to any conclusion.
Changing,
that's my concern.
Changing the five-year time of travel to 16 or 60-day time of travel as the ordinance is currently written, do you agree that would be a good thing or otherwise?
It's about 4.5
years. I would rather not state a personal preference here. I will only state to you that the information that we received from the private purveyors indicated that a 60-day time of travel was acceptable to them. They indicated that with a 60-day time of travel, that all of the concerns that they had with regard to contamination issues could be addressed within that time frame. The five-year time of travel, Mr. Phillips, reflects, I think, a concern on the part of DENREC that there be adequate recharge capability within that wellhead area and that there not be issues related to saltwater intrusion. They address these concerns primarily to the area east of Route 1, but I'm not sure that that was not really discussed by the committee, and I don't have a comment on it personally. I respect their concern there. And my only desire here is to make you aware of the fact that the five-year time of travel is going to affect a significant amount of real estate within the county.
Absolutely. Oh, that's huge.
A huge amount.
Were you, Mr. Willem, may I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Were you aware of that provision in 89.6b that says all public wells should be sited so that the safe zone is located entirely on the land of the applicant or
yes.
on land that they hold an easement for?
The question is not regarding the safe zone. I think I have no problem with the designation as it's stated here regarding the safe zone. The concern is that from the safe zone to the end of the five-year time of travel, that becomes the wellhead protection area that has, I think, some significant ramifications on adjacent property owners. My concern here is not that we necessarily eliminate this wording, but that we address the impact on those associated properties and find a mechanism.
If you don't pump the water, you got to pay for it, no matter where.
I think that is probably hits at the heart of the issue. I think there needs to be a recognition on the part of the purveyors and the state and the county that if you withdraw water, especially for profit, that there ought to be compensation or at least some respect to those property owners that are affected within that wellhead area.
There needs to be recognition of the impacts somehow written into this ordinance. That's
and,
maybe
and all of you have received these letters from Tidewater and from the other purveyors attempting to make a significant reach in some of the very most outlying areas of our county, which aren't even slated for public water supply.
Gobbling it up like crazy.
Right. And that once that well's there, once those water districts are established,
right,
then you're at the mercy of that particular purveyor.
Unless you happen to have subdivided off prior and all that kind of stuff. But if any news after this ordinance is passed, is that right, Jim, that it's too, everybody's impacted after that? It's only old?
Not necessarily. There's a long list of exceptions from this ordinance.
Right. Let's review it all. We've heard
including
this. Including
subdivisions, individual wells, individual homes.
Okay.
Mr. President, regarding the implications that affect that five-year time of travel, I think that they are reasonable encumbrances with regard to the 35% impervious cover and then the ultimate 60% impervious. I think they are reasonable encumbrances. The only question is, how does that impact the existing property owners that are affected by it? Thank you.
Thanks, R.C.
Anyone else that would like to be heard concerning this proposed ordinance?
I do have a
gentleman back.
I'm ready.
Doug Rambo, Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, 89 Kings Highway, Dover, Delaware. I'd like to address some of the comments with respect to the 60-day time of travel and the 150-foot radius wellhead protection area that the department supplies with respect to confined aquifer wells. I was sitting in the back doing a quick calculation of what a 60-day time of travel in a confined aquifer would equate to. And for a 500-gallon per minute well that is in a typical aquifer, which has a porosity of 30% and a 20-foot screen interval, you're looking at a 553-foot radius for a wellhead protection area in a confined aquifer well. For a smaller well, which is pumping 30 gallons per minute for a 60-day time period with the same parameters other than a 10-foot screen interval, you're looking at a 192-foot wellhead protection area, radius wellhead protection area, both of which are larger than the minimum radius that the state has provided to all the counties for wellhead protection areas. So I would like to think that the county might reconsider on maintaining a 150-foot radius wellhead protection area aside from the 60-day. If you would like to go 60-day, the state will not find any reason to dispute being more protective than what we're already providing.
As 100-foot is more protective now than what we're doing.
Yeah, the 100.
Is that correct?
The 100-foot safe.
The 100-foot safe zone is better than what we're doing right now.
The 100-foot safe zone is a start, but it's not the entire wellhead protection area that we've recommended to.
Recommended, but that's better than what we got now.
Yes.
Okay.
We take baby steps around here.
Okay. Any other question?
What was the footage of that again on the first one?
500 gallon per minute well has a radius of 553 feet.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And the smaller one?
A 30 gallon per minute well has a radius of 192 feet.
And we're protecting 100 feet.
Your safe zone is, you're adopting the wellhead protection areas that the department is providing you. According to, I believe it's 89-5A, overlay maps prepared or provided by DENREC are hereby referenced in accordance. you're adopting the wellhead protection areas that are supplied by the department. The safe zone is protecting a portion of that wellhead protection area.
Right. From structures.
For structures, and if the amendment that Mr. Burdett proposed would be kind of community low impact community open space in the outer portion.
You don't see that being a problem.
No, that's well accepted in the source water protection community.
Okay.
So your concern is that you would prefer to see 150-foot safe zone? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we're not disputing the county's safe zone requirements. Okay. We're saying that we're providing you a wellhead protection area of 150 feet for confined aquifer wells and unconfined aquifer wells that are pumping less than 50,000 gallons per day.
Okay, that's DENREC's guideline.
Okay. We're providing those areas to you. If you keep your 89-6D2 for 60-day time of travel, your wellhead protection areas are getting larger than 150 feet. Again, the department will not oppose the county's protecting a larger area.
Put this in layman's term.
He's okay with 100 feet. If you go bigger, he don't care.
Are you okay with the 60 rather than the 5-year?
Yeah.
Well, the 5-year time of travel in the unconfined aquifer has been agreed to in 89-6C.
Committee has recommended that.
Yeah. They supported that, right?
Yeah, they supported that, yes.
Right. But also, we just heard testimony that...
There's since changing that now.
How is it in, as I have to ask, Mr. Whelan said that, was it provided in the other two counties' wellhead protection ordinance?
There are 5-year time of travel wellhead protection areas in all three counties.
Are you sure?
Yes. Newcastle County has the Glendale wellfield and the Eastern States wellfield.
Is that the entire county, or is it just individual?
It's an individual deal.
Those are major.
Our county will have 5-year travel in all wells installed over 50,000 gallons.
For unconfined wells that are pumping greater than 50,000 gallons per day, we do model unconfined aquifer wells with a 5-year time of travel in all three counties.
Is it their ordinance?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
In Newcastle County, it is listed as a Class B wellhead protection area, which is done using...
Is it an overlay then?
Yes.
It's not the entire county then?
It is two specific well fields that are...
In other words, it's an overlay zone. It's not the entire county.
Oh, county.
It is a combination of...
You're roundabout me here now.
Well, they may not have a countywide ordinance.
They still have to do. They have to do the same thing we do.
They have a countywide ordinance. The only major areas are where this applies is the Glendale wellfield and the Eastern States wellfield, where the wells are pumping greater than 50,000 gallons in the unconfined aquifer. All of your other wells in the county are confined because a lot of the farming up in Newcastle County have the allocations for the unconfined aquifer.
So there's only two wells in Newcastle County to pump over 50,000 gallons in an unconfined aquifer?
There are 6 wells in the Glendale wellfield, and there are 2 wells in the Eastern States wellfield.
Let's just try to protect water in Sussex County.
I've
heard enough about Newcastle.
They take water from the river then?
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah.
Actually, it's water that falls on the ground surface. It's not stream water.
Oh, you got a nerve talking about housing.
Rambo, are you saying that you do not have... I know there's different things you would have liked to see different in this, and you've worked with the committee over time. Are there any major concerns that you or DENREC have with this as proposed? Or
As proposed, no. There are no major concerns.
You could live with what we've got here proposed in writing today.
Yes.
I guess thank you.
That's all we need. You like the state is agreeable to what we have.
We're agreeable to what you have, and
it'll work.
But I'm just saying that
you would have liked to have better.
We would have liked some things better, but I'm just saying that your 60-day time of travel is more protective than what we're offering, and
I only consider that.
Go ahead, Mr. Rogers.
On the 89-5 on number A, how often are you going to be providing these maps?
We are updating the maps twice a year, so June and December will be the updates that go into the maps. And we will notify the counties and municipalities accordingly with each update.
Okay.
Will they be how are the maps done? Do you have some private consultant do it that's actually a geologist that actually, you know, stamps it and signs off that this is the recharge area, this is the you know, all these type things, or is it done in-house?
It is done in-house, but the staff of the source water program is two professional geologists, and
they will stamp off on
yes.
it and make it certified? Is that? Okay.
And we do have a letter, as noted, there was a concern at the last council meeting
MOU.
About an MOU, or so we do have a letter saying
yes.
that they'll do it.
Stuart Lovell from Denrec to saying that the
so
state would enter into an MOU with the county to
yes, with the
site wells and require easements where as per ordinance, as per
yes.
any ordinance. That the
we would work with the county in making sure that wells are sited in accordance to your safe zone requirements.
I got no problem. But my personal opinion is until we have that, I mean, we need to work that now. It's not that I don't trust you, but I don't trust them. Okay. This is the only leverage we got.
You don't trust them, they don't trust us. Let's move on.
Okay. That's cool. All right. Any other thing?
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, Lord. Mr. Here Baker.
Fix it.
I promised myself I wasn't going to say anything today, but I just had to have your comments.
Another promise broken.
That's right. But, there's two different issues here.
Name.
My name is Wayne Baker. I live at 17420 Minas Conaway Road, Lewis, Delaware. And I was on the committee, served on the committee. And again, my personal comments. But in regards to his previous comments, there's two issues here. One is wellhead protection and water. And DNRAC does that. So either you're going to take his comments and incorporate them into your ordinance, and then you're going to become the experts on water in Sussex County, or you're going to let them continue their job, protect the groundwater. Your concern is land use, as I understand the name
right.
of the game. And the two have a conflict. But you have to do your land use procedures, and you have to get away from the five-year time of travel, because, again, somebody could put a well in adjacent to my property, i.e., I live in on 18-acre partial next to Mallard Point. When I first bought my partial, Mallard Point wasn't there, was completely unheard of. So I built my house, and all of a sudden I find I'm in Tidewater's water utility area that I never voted on. I didn't know it was there. So that when I came time for me to put my well in, they said I had to hook into Tidewater. I said, damn if I am. So I went out and got a nag well put in and tied my house into it. If they want to come take my well out, let them come try it. I'm not going to do it. But the idea is that they can put a well in and influence an adjacent property owner unbeknown to anything ever going down the road. And it's not right. And that's what he wants. He wants a five-year time of travel protection, land use protection, into this ordinance that's a changing ball game that even Kevin Burdett acknowledged that at what point in time it takes 3 years to get a plan through, at what point in time do you realize this well's just got put in 2 months ago and now this whole plan has to change? Gentlemen, you can't do that.
Unless we put something like RC said that protects, you know, I mean, you know, it takes, do you think
the committee we went through and we delineated, everything had to, the purveyor had to buy, pay for, do everything. And we wound up taking all those words out because we figured it would be so cumbersome and so hard to administer that I don't know how you could possibly do it. I don't think Jim could do it.
So you don't agree with that concept, though?
I agree with the concept, but I don't know how you put it into an ordinance.
I'm just surprised you left the issue silence in your recommendation.
I just mentioned it to you. We mentioned
the
it to you all
along. The recommendation from the committee, left the issue of compensation silent.
Because we had too much trouble. The only thing that we addressed was early in the meeting on this safe zone area that had to be entirely within the developer's property.
Was that guy in law? We should do that.
And it's in 89. I forget what section that is in. But you can't stretch out and determine other people's land use. And this is what Sussex County Council does, is land use. You're not in the water business. And I think you ought to remember that. That's important.
In this document, the last one that was presented, I know it was after the committee, with the 100-foot and the time of travel, the way it's written.
The five-year time of travel was put in. I don't think the committee voted on that.
That was after that, I know.
I'm not sure how it got in there. But we did not support anything suggesting a five-year time of travel.
But he just said today 60 days was okay.
We did talk about, and I'm not sure, I think we did vote on the 60-day time of travel. But Mr. Baker and...
Got some candy.
Huh?
Got some candy.
Oh, I can't remember the thing.
RC. Mr. Kramer.
But they were there, and they basically says that John Hughes would not, they're going to withhold money. The governor would hold money at Sussex County, or they wouldn't approve our comprehensive plan if this was in there, or was not in there. So basically, it got put in somehow. But it still should not be in there, in my way of thinking.
They don't have it anyway, Wayne, so you don't have to worry.
Pardon?
They don't have it anyway, so you don't have to
worry. But, you know, talk about that for a second. I went up to the last committee meeting, the Livable Delaware Action Committee, whatever they are. And, you know, when you go to the internet and you print out a list of the people on the committee, gentlemen, there's basically three or four lay people on the committee out of 21, and the rest of them are all state employees. Chaired by the Lieutenant Governor John Carney, who basically had conducted the whole meeting. He said everything that he wanted to say. Very few people had anything else to say, and he recommends to the governor whether he accept our plan or not. I think it's a big joke, and I don't think you should listen to anything that they say, and I don't think the county should be held responsible for any of that. My way of thinking. And why have a compromise plan? Do what you gentlemen feel best for the citizens of our county. And we can't listen to the state. If you don't, you just won't give up your seat and let the state run the show.
Thank you, Will.
Good points.
Anyone else that would like to be heard concerning this proposed ordinance? Going once?
No, Dan Kramer.
Let the record show that no one else has to be recognized.
He boycotted it, right?
Is it your pleasure to close the hearing, gentlemen?
I have some questions. I wouldn't mind leaving the record open.
Would you speak into the mic?
Mr. Phillips said he wouldn't mind leaving the record open.
Have a time period?
I'm trying to figure out the conflict between the committee's recommendations and some of the comments made by committee members today. And maybe leaving the records leaving it open is not necessary if the attorney says that I can,
correspond
with some of these folks without breaking any laws.
Well, if you leave the record open, you're giving an opportunity for citizens to submit further information. That's really the only reason for leaving it open.
All right. Record, I'm okay.
Okay. The record of the hearing is closed, but before we do it, let me ask one more time. Is anyone else here who wants to say anything?
Let me ask RC willing to come back up. RC, you mind?
Okay, well, the record is not closed.
Come on back up. We're back in business.
Still on the road.
I had some problems with the statements from the Department of Natural Resources on some of those issues with regards to time of travel and things. Can you clarify some of those points and the conflicts I think you may have recognized as well?
My understanding, Mr. Phillips, that the five-year time of travel is delineated in all wellheads throughout the state. That's just a software program that's available, and that's what they use It's just a standard in the industry. There's nothing wrong with delineating the five-year time of travel, and it is in the other comp plans. However, when you begin to place restrictions on that five-year within that five-year time of travel, that's what differentiates our document from the other documents within the other counties. They do not have the same kinds of restrictions that we have placed within this document with regard to impervious surface, with regard to separation of effluents or materials that would come off of roof structures. And that's what makes this document significantly different than the other counties. If I inferred that they didn't have a five-year time of travel delineation, that was not what my intent was. It's just the restrictions placed on that. The 60-year time of travel came up in discussion. And I want you to understand that there are conflicts because there were different opinions within the committee. And not all of those committee opinions were expressed in the final document, because that's what you do. You build a consensus when you're in a committee. Otherwise, you don't get a document. So that's what we attempted to do in order to serve the objective that we were entrusted with. That being said, I thought it's incumbent upon me to let you be aware of the concerns that I had specific to that document. Mm-hmm. The five-year time of travel is, I think, a very wise thing to have available to everyone within the state. It allows us to segregate the location of wells so that they don't impact one another. But at the same time, when those delineations are used for land use determinations, it's incumbent upon this body to determine whether those uses are appropriate or not. With regard to water quality and water quantity and the protection thereof, nothing in my comments, nor I think with any of the comments with anyone on the committee, would infer that they were not concerned about those same issues. I would just subject the following statement to you, and that is that the city of Dover, in its wisdom, decided to go outside of its city limits and purchase fee simple property on which they developed a significant wellhead. I think that's a forward-thinking proposition. I think that's something that every jurisdiction within the state ought to look at if they want to withdraw water for their citizens. The city of Hampton Roads, many years ago, took and had the foresight to basically purchase every impound possible from the city of Hampton Roads to the north of the fall line. They now control all the water on that peninsula between the York River and the James River. And if you want water, you buy it from Hampton Roads Public Service Authority. There's nothing wrong with that, but my point is that they chose to go out and actually purchase the property in order to place the impounds or the well fields they're on. Today, we're taking a different approach. And my concern is that if you purvey water for a profit, then you should be expected to compensate those landowners, whether they be an individual homeowner or whether they be, and understand what the impact is going to be as a homeowner. Now, given the fact that you have a 35% allowance and a 60% of impervious surface allowance, I don't think this requirement is burdensome. But I do think it will, in fact, impact land uses that we might not clearly understand today. And as long as you're aware of that, I think it's fine. My comment is just to clarify his statement that every county has this five-year. Well, they have the delineation, but they don't necessarily have the restrictions within that delineation.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks, RT. Rich?
What are you doing, Finn?
This discussion, Rich Collins, Positive Growth Alliance, this discussion brings up, I believe, a very important issue and one of the fundamental conflicts with this whole idea. We have an abundance of water in Sussex County. We are only developing at one unit per acre or less on the average. According to Tidewater, they made a public presentation 1 year ago. They said that they are the largest provider of water in Sussex County. They are only using 3% of what they could use, and that is with absolutely no drawdown. That's, you know, the excess above drawdown level. We are opening a Pandora's box here because of what you just heard about compensation. I can absolutely see the logic of requiring a water provider, forcing them to compensate everyone they're going to impact by putting that well. But if you do that, how will anybody be able to buy a home if they have to go out and buy the water rights on hundreds of acres of land That is a cost. They're not going to pay it. The citizens are going to pay it. And so how will we do it? And I say what we're doing, at given our patterns of development. Now, let's make it clear. In years to come, if things change, let's say that it's obvious for whatever crazy reason we're on the path to becoming another Manhattan. That's a different situation. But while we are developing at this very low density, we don't have a water problem. We are creating multiple layers of cost and red tape that we are going to pay for decades to come. And where is the benefit? Now, I had two conversations with Mr. Barnt of DENREC within the last month. I specifically asked him what their concern was, whether we're talking quality or, in other words, protection or recharge. And if I asked him twice, and this is just my word, and if he denies it, what am I to say? But I understand that the big dispute here is about recharge. The 5-year time of travel, the main reason is for recharge. One of the major water companies has flat out told me they have never had a well go dry, and they are absolutely not concerned about needing any 5-year time of travel protection to keep their wellheads, their major wellhead, they're all the big ones, from going dry. And at the present time, if one ever did, I think they did say they had to replace one for some reason, it's not that expensive to do. The concern is you get too many layers of requirements, and all of a sudden the cost of replacing a well becomes a major obstacle. So these are all, I don't envy you. I'll be honest with you. I know you're in this tremendous conflict with the state putting pressure on you. And I'll be honest with you, most governments, you know what they do? They would ignore all this and just bull ahead and go ahead and do it. And we'd all have to live with the consequences. That has not been the tradition here in Sussex, and good luck.
Anything further?
Going once, going twice. I'm going to close the record. If anybody has anything to say, this is the time. Thank you for your attendance and your participation. The record on this hearing is closed.
Okay. Make a motion we defer.
Second.
Move the second that we defer on the ordinance. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes. I
can't do Mr. Yes. Rogers? Yes. Motion passed. Okay.